Justice, WPFW 89.3 FM.
I'm Candy Shannon, and you are tuned to member-supported WPFW Washington.
Turn it around.
If we all could love one another, all the world could be as one. Just take time to love one another, all the world could be as one. Black man, white man, standing together, no more fighting to be done. Yellow, red man, dancing together, all the world could be as one.
Welcome to Heal DC. This is Monday, May 6th. And fasten your seatbelts, folks. Get out your pen and pencil. We have a packed show in store for you today. I am thankful and blessed to be joined in the studio by none other than Lucy Murphy. And we would ring some bells and bang some drums for her if we could. Welcome, Lucy.
Good morning, Johnny.
And we also have Chuck Hicks on the fast plane back from Louisiana. Glad you made it home, Chuck.
Good morning, Chuck.
And we have a packed show today. We're going to be honoring, first of all, we're going to honor Rick Tingling Clemens. Had a beautiful celebration of life on Saturday, done by his wife, Michelle Tingling Clemens, and her beautiful family. So this show is in honor of Rick. It is also in honor of John Brown, whose birthday is this Thursday, May 9th. He was born May 9th, 1800, and his spirit is definitely still with us. And it's also in honor of Mother's Day. We're going to share the true history of Mother's Day with you. And of course, in honor of all the students out there prioritizing peace and justice and life at the expense of possibly some of their futures. And of course, in honor of the people in Palestine. So with that, we're going to get right into our first segment, which is Lucy talking about some very special activities happening this Thursday and Friday. So take it away, Lucy.
Well, we have a very special concert, 1,000 Grandmothers and Friends for Peace, this coming Thursday at the Washington City Church of the Brethren. That's 337 North Carolina Avenue Southeast. It is a free concert, family-friendly. We have the Black Workers Center Chorus, Colleen Cattell, D.C. Labor Chorus, Emma's Revolution, Annie Hassett, Pam Rogers, Raging Grannies, Songrise, and Surprise Guests. And that starts at 7 o'clock on Thursday, May 9th, John Brown's birthday.
Absolutely. Let me just ask you, Lucy, is that Church of the Brethren, is that where is it in relationship to, for example,
It's Capitol Hill.
Okay, good.
It's close to the Library of Congress.
Okay, great. That's Church of the Brethren.
Yes, but this is a highlight of a week of activities with special activities on May 9th and 10th in the morning. We ask people to go to the Code Pink website and codepink.org, and you will see a lot of activities that you can sign up for and get all the details and, address
and be out in the
time.
Streets.
Yes, and because we need to stop this killing of innocent children and mothers and elderly people and hospital patients
and doctors.
Yes, so Rayburn House Office cafeteria on Thursday early in the morning. I believe it's 9 o'clock. And Friday, people will migrate over to the Senate to lobby. So it's House on Thursday and lobbying the Senate on Friday.
Yes, and then we hope to see you all Thursday evening for sure. It's going to be a fabulous concert. And this is being done, Lucy, in honor of Mother's Day. So we're here,
yes.
Lucy and I are here to tell you that Mother's Day is not, the history of Mother's Day is not all about sending Hallmark cards out and spending a lot of money on flowers and whatnot. But it has a very profound history rooted in ending war. And Lucy, if you can help me talk about that history, it started by several women at the end or during the Civil War, and was really to put an end to the horrific carnage of that war. And perhaps we can read, let me see if we can find it, read a statement about... from Julia Ward Howe about the beginning of Labor Day. I mean, I'm sorry.
Mother's Day. Yes. And I had it up, and then I had to do some other things, and so it's migrated.
Okay, let me see if I can start it. That's Julia Ward Howe created this Mother's Day proclamation in 1870. The image will read some of the original Mother's Day proclamation. Arise then, women of the day, arise, all women who have hearts, whether our baptism be that of water or of tears. Say firmly, we will not have great questions decided by irrelevant agencies. Folks, our husband shall not come to us reeking with carnage. And I'll kind of move on to a little later in the statement. We women of one country will be too tender of those of another country to allow our sons to be trained to injure theirs. From the bosom of the devastated earth and voice goes up with our own. It says, disarm, disarm. The sword of murder is not the balance of justice. Blood does not wipe out dishonor. Our violence vindicate possession, as men have often forsaken the plow and the anvil at the summons of war. Let women now leave all that may be left of home for a great and earnest day of counsel. Let them meet first as women to bewail and commemorate the dead. Let them solemnly take counsel with each other as to the means whereby the great human family can live in peace, each bearing after his or her own kind the sacred impress. In the name of womanhood and humanity, I earnestly ask that a General Congress of Women, without limit of nationality, may be appointed and held, and at an earliest period consistent with its objectives, to promote the alliance of the different nationalities, the amicable settlement of international questions, the great and general interests of peace. So that was the Mother's Day for Peace that was celebrated June 2nd, I think it was, 1870. And that is the true meaning of Mother's Day, folks. So anything else, Lucy, you'd like to say about that?
Just that I encourage people to go to codepink.org and get more information and register for the activities. It's good for us to know how many people are coming.
Absolutely, and we hope to see you there. And let me just share a little bit, because I was moving kind of quickly, what we have in store for you for the rest of the hour. In a moment, we're going to hear a song from one of the groups that's going to be performing Thursday night, and that is Emma's Revolution. And you might be familiar with Emma's Revolution if you listen to WPFW and Code Pink every Thursday morning at 11 a.m. You can hear the song that they created about 20 years ago, but this is a new song that they created specifically to address the situation that we're in now. So we're going to hear that Emma's Revolution song in a moment. Then we're going to be joined by a sister from a group called If Not Now. It's another anti-Zionist Jewish organization that is out in the streets together with Jewish Voices for Peace and many others demanding an end to this genocide. And I met this young lady Tuesday evening at an outdoor Freedom Seder. None of us are free till all of us are free was the theme for the Seder. So we're going to be hearing from her in a moment. Then after that, I must say that someone told me, a friend told me about some horrific violence that took place in none other than Mississippi last week. Black students were attacked by white racist supremacists, by a large mob. So thankfully, Dory Ladner spoke to me, and we have a wonderful friend of Dory Ladner and a well-known investigative reporter calling in from Mississippi, Jackson, Mississippi, a little later in the show, and that is Clarence Mitchell. So we thank Dory for that assistance. Then, and as I said, we have a packed show. There's a lot going on in the community. We are squeezing in an unfortunate development with Unity Healthcare, which is a very important organization that was founded. Actually, the first clinic, Upper Cardozo, was founded in the 1960s, was the first federal health clinic in the country, and unfortunately, it's under new leadership, and they are treating their workers very poorly. Some of the workers have already quit, walked out, so we're going to have the union organizer joining us to tell us what is going on with Unity Healthcare. And last but not least, we have Harriet's Wildest Dreams and Kiana representing Harriet's Wildest Dreams, ending up the show as she will talk about Black Mama's Bailout, which is bailing out, helping women, Black women who are incarcerated in this country. I believe it's 150,000 Black women are incarcerated, and Kiana will tell us about a very important activity happening this Saturday with Harriet's Wildest Dreams. So with that said, let's play. Lucy.
If I could just say that to amplify the voices of people, we need more poets and musicians. And Emma's Revolution and I are members of People's Music Network, which actually started here in Washington, D.C. in 1981. When people left town and some people moved into the ancestor world, the chapter became dormant. But we are reviving People's Music Network at Bloom Bars this Friday from 5 to 7. Bloom Bars on 11th Street. And people, take a look at peoplesmusic.org, and also take a look at Bloom Bars, on which is not a bar, but an art space. Actually, they don't allow alcohol in there.
Wow.
But Bloom Bars is a great space this Friday from 5 to 7. If you're a musician, poet, singer, and you want to give voice to people's struggles, we need you. And with that, I'm going to turn it back to Joni.
Okay, that's very important information. And I think, Lucy, and I also want to urge you, listeners, if you have not been out to one of those encampments, well, the main one is GW, but Howard University students are also out there. I believe they don't have an encampment, but they are out there.
Yes.
Many days. I don't know if you've been there.
21st and H Streets Northwest.
And that's the GW encampment. I would encourage you to go out there anytime, morning, noon, or night. I try to go. I wish I could go every day, but I've been there three times in the past week. It is extremely inspiring. And you can't really know what it's like until you go there. Right, Lucy?
That's right.
And every day is different. They have music going on. They have all kinds of discussions and seminars. They have, sometimes it gets quite rowdy. Sometimes it's peaceful and quiet. Just to see the tents out there of all the students and other people camping out there at night. So please go check it out. It's not that far from the metro, a couple of blocks, and it is 8th Street and 21st. Please, folks, go out, even if you go for 10 minutes.
And I want to say it's lively, not rowdy. Rowdy is something else. It's lively, folks, you know, and join the students and the professors who have come out.
Absolutely. It's inspiring, encouraging. So before we bring on our guest from If Not Now, let's hear a little bit what Emma's Revolution has to say.
Break the cycle of violence.
Break the cycle of violence.
Thousands die by your silence.
Thousands die by your silence.
Break the cycle of violence.
Break the cycle of violence.
We will cease fire now.
We will cease fire now.
Hear our voices arise for peace.
Hear our voices arise for peace.
We'll rise and rise till all wars cease.
Rise and rise till all wars cease.
Hear our voices rise for peace.
Hear our voices rise for peace.
We need a ceasefire now.
We need a ceasefire now.
We put our bodies.
Okay, that was Emma's Revolution. And again, you can hear them live on at Thursday night at that great concert. And we'll give out the address one more time. And hopefully we have our guest. Yay, great. Okay, take it away, Mattel Keeper. Can you introduce yourself? And so glad you can join us from It If Not Now. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. I'll just briefly introduce myself and then we can take it away, I guess. My name's Maytal. I use they, them pronouns, so I guess you can call me a sibling of the movement. I'm here as part of If Not Now, which is a movement of American Jews that organized community to end U.S. support for Israel's apartheid system, the ongoing genocide, and we want equality, justice, and a thriving future for all people. And a part of that, alongside a lot of different campaigns that we've been doing in light of this ongoing genocide, the ground invasion of Rafah that has just started and is atrocious, especially on Yom HaShoah, the Day of Remembrance for the Holocaust, which was a strategic part on the state of Israel, by the state of Israel. We recently observed Passover, which is a very important holiday in the Jewish tradition. And it's a holiday rooted in themes of liberation, freedom, justice. And for me, an anti-Zionist Jew, I thought it was important that we have Zionists who are celebrating this holiday and proclaiming liberation when there is subjugation going on every day. And so we, If Not Now, DC, alongside Jewish Voice for Peace and the New Synagogue Project, decided to host a Freedom for All Seder at the Seat of Power, aka in front of the Capitol, last week on the last night of Passover. Of course, traditionally, you host a Seder on the first night or the second night of Passover, but we did a little leeway with that in order to make sure we could bring people together. And we went through the steps of the Seder using the Haggadah, or the, you know, the prayer book for that was adapted from If Not Now's Freedom for All Haggadah, as well as Jewish Voice for Peace Haggadah that they also released a few weeks ago, in order to bring people together to remember that we are fighting for an end to this genocide, a permanent and lasting ceasefire, an end to unconditional aid to Israel, among many other things.
And if people want to get in touch or involved with If Not Now, how might they do it?
So If Not Now is a growing movement of people. We're constantly growing, looking for people to support. You can text If Not Now, all caps, to 88504. Or you can follow us on Instagram, If Not Now DC. You can get information for chapter events, trainings, and stuff like that. And you can look around to find what your organizing home is. There are plenty of options, luckily, in the DMV area to get plugged into the movement if you're Jewish, if you're anti-Zionist, both in my case, depending on where you feel like your organizing home could be. There's definitely a place for you. What I think is really important about If Not Now is that it's really striving to bring American Jews who have been questioning or engrossed in the propaganda of Zionism for so long and bring them over to understanding the gross violations of human rights that are going on in our name, which is inherently problematic. And it's a way of appealing to and bringing in Jews who don't have that type of resource in their lives or that type of support because mainstream American Judaism is so intertwined with Zionism. And that was a huge issue for me on my own personal journey.
Okay. And I know when I was there, one of your key people there with If Not Now talked about what If Not Now is doing to lobby to stop this invasion of Rafah. I don't know if you can share that real quickly, and then we need to say goodbye.
Absolutely. And thank you so much for having me. So, of course, we recognize that one of our biggest strengths is to lobby the U.S. government to stop taking money from AIPAC, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee. They've pledged $100 million for this election cycle to fund candidates who want to uphold the fascist state of Israel. And so we want to tell congresspeople, senators of all sides to reject AIPAC. And we believe that's critical in order to stop unconditional U.S. military funding to Israel.
Absolutely. So that's we applaud you for doing that. And we all need
Thank
to
you.
do the same, make as many calls as possible. These calls do have an impact, calling Congress. So we need to do that immediately because it's very, as usual, the news is very frightening. It looks like Israel is ready to go on with that genocide. So we need to do whatever we can to stop it. And thank you so much, Mital, and Jewish If Not Now, we thank you for being here with us today, and we hope to talk to you again in the future.
Thank you so much. It's my pleasure. Have a great day.
Okay, you too. And our next guest, as I mentioned, is with us in part because of my friend Dori Ladner, although she left us physically on March 11th. She's still very much with us, and she would always encourage me when we had issues related to Mississippi to give this guest a call. Jerry Mitchell is an investigative reporter solving unresolved murders. We're going to have Jerry on for a longer time than we have now. Unresolved murders of the civil rights era. He's with the Mississippi Center for Investigative Reporting at Mississippi Today. And I thought about Jerry when I heard, and we're going to talk about this briefly, but when I heard about the horrific attack on black students at Old Miss last week by a very large team of white supremacists. And Jerry's going to talk about that a little, but as fate would have it, Jerry actually has some very positive news to share, which I never would have known if Dori hadn't told me to call him. So, Jerry, welcome.
Well, it's good to be with you.
And again, I apologize for not having enough time. We're going to have you back. But let's maybe start with the good news about Medgar Evers.
That's right. Medgar Evers basically received the Presidential Medal of Honor. And, of course, it was accepted by his daughter, Rena Evers Everett, from President Biden. And, obviously, it's the nation's highest civilian honor. And so,
and this was when? When did this happen?
This was Friday.
So it's interesting. It happened, and I'm not sure when that attack was of those students at Ole Miss. I think it might have been Thursday. But that is very good news. And again, say again what he received.
It was the Presidential Medal of Freedom, pardon me, I think I said honor, Presidential Medal of Freedom. It's the highest civilian honor. Yes,
absolutely. And we all know that Medgar Evers was the head of the NAACP in Mississippi. Dory Ladner had the last meal with him right about within an hour before he was assassinated.
Yeah, I mean, she was, mentored her and her sister, Joyce.
Yes, we talk about that a lot.
And obviously, they were very close to him and worked with him. And he encouraged them to get involved in the movement. Of course, they were, I'm sure you've already talked about this, but they were students at Jackson State University and were kicked out for their activism.
Yes.
And basically had to go to Tougaloo College, which was more of a safe haven for the civil rights movement.
Yes, and before we'll talk about Jackson State, because we're coming up to the anniversary, May 11th, I think it was, when two students were murdered at Jackson State. It doesn't get discussed as much as Kent State, but let's talk a little bit for what we both know about what happened last week at Ole Miss, Jerry.
I've just seen the videos and the reports, and I wasn't there. The allegation is that these white students were making monkey noises toward a black student, and that certainly appeared to be the case.
But again, and I apologize too for not having. I was originally going to play the clip. But apparently there were about 20 students, African-American students, and there were hundreds of white supremacists. So it's very frightening.
It's getting ugly, and it's unfortunate. And
well, Jerry, you know, I think unfortunate is too not strong.
Too mild a word.
It's And hopefully we'll get more information about who was involved. There were apparently hundreds of white people.
I know there was a student, fraternity student, who was kicked out basically for using the N-word. I know that as well. So we'll at Ole Miss. So we'll see. We'll kind of continue to monitor that and see what continuing reports come out of that, but that's
I would say that there have been very minimal reports so far, and I'm not sure if it happened on Thursday, but it was the end of last week, and
and it may have been Friday. I was unfortunately out of town. I was in Boston, it's just.
And Jerry, I would say that this is different from some of the other attacks on other campuses. We know that what happened in Los Angeles was also horrific. But the difference in this one is that there were not that many students, only about 20, I believe. And I believe there were several hundred white people who attacked them. So that is different.
The numbers were... I mean, the number of protesters compared to the counter protesters was hardly any protesters comparatively. So it was to see it get abusive like that, and for any kind of racism to enter in is just unacceptable. It's I kind of think, unfortunately, emblematic of a larger thing that's going on in this country where. People that maybe racist language in the past would have been shunned. Now it's being, okay to say these kind of things publicly. And there are a variety of factors for that. You know, politicians who've kind of made it okay to be ugly and even racist. And of course, other factors like social media, I think, has some factors as well, where people get on and, places like Twitter, and they say racist stuff all the time, and nothing happens.
And I think, though, that this is even more frightening, and Lucy could jump in, or even Chuck. Certainly Dory would be speaking loudly, because It's bad enough to say racist things, but to physically, I believe these students were physically attacked. So we're right. talking about the potential of mounting violence in this situation.
Oh yeah, and I unfortunately I think we're going to see this continue throughout this year.
Well,
I hate to predict that, but it feels that way. I'll put it that way.
It certainly does. And Jerry, can you just tell us briefly about some of the unresolved murder cases that you've worked on that we all know about, but we may not know it was you who did a lot of that work?
Oh, sure. I did stories on the Megar Evers case. And that case was reopened and re-prosecuted and the killer convicted. I did stories on a civil rights leader that probably is unknown to most Americans. His name is Vernon Dahmer, who was in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. And he basically died defending his family from a Klan attack in 1966. And authorities, after my stories, reopened the case, and the head of the Klan is the one who ordered that, Sam Bowers, and then he went to prison. I wrote about the Birmingham church bombing case, went and interviewed Bobby Cherry, who was one of the last seven suspects in the case, and basically found out he was lying about his alibi, and of course exposed that, and he went to prison. And then the Mississippi, what's sometimes called the Mississippi Burning case, the killings of, by the Klan of James Chaney and Andy Goodman and Mickey Schwerner. And that case was reopened. And the killer, the man who basically kind of helped orchestrate those killings, went to prison.
Yes. And again, we're going to have you on again, perhaps around Dory's birthday, which is the end of June. But before you leave, just briefly tell us about Jackson State. Some younger people may not even know that.
Sure.
What happened in 1970 on May 11th.
Yeah, well, what happened was basically law enforcement officers killed two students. And
two students who were protesting.
Well, right. One was protesting and the other was actually a high school student on campus who, from what we gather, may have even just been a passerby who was killed by law enforcement. They literally, you can go online and see the pictures, but they literally opened fire, claimed there was a sniper, right? Which there was no proof there was a sniper, but they literally, the state police literally just raked, you know, with bullets, this women's dormitory. And there's still bullet holes in the dormitory to this day. Mm. But you can go online and see all the, you know, in the window, all the shots that were fired. It's really, really a miracle that only two students were killed. Thanks.
We know that there's a lot going on, but, and again, there's been some emphasis on the anniversary of Kent State, which was May 4th, this past Saturday, 1970. But we also need to remember and reflect on the murders that Jerry just talked about, which will be this
Saturday. And there were multiple students injured. Some seriously in that attack as well. And I might add that one of the trooper that was over that group, his name was Lloyd Jones. And he was also the one who shot Ben Brown in the back and killed him 3 years earlier, right off the Jackson State campus in a protest.
Mm. Wow.
So this was, had happened before.
Mm-hmm. And are there any commemorations that take place in honor of these people who were killed?
It usually are around the time of the anniversary.
Which will be this Saturday.
Correct.
So we will honor them the best we can, and we will not forget them. Jerry Mitchell, we are so thankful you could join us at the last minute. I picked up the phone and got you right away. And again, I thank our own Dory Ladner for assisting us with this segment. Jerry, we will be in touch with you again. And thank you for all the work you've
done. Thank you for having me. And Dory and Joyce are two of my heroes. I just love them. So.
Yes, and we love them too. And they're very much a part of our station. And we're going to make you a part of it as well. Thank you. Thank you, Jerry Mitchell.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
And we appreciate you. Now we're moving on to another, I hate to call it a tragic story, but it is a tragic story unfolding. And it's a slightly a different topic around healthcare in this city, Unity Healthcare. I'm glad to introduce, and he will be on again another time with us, Carrie Lane, who is a union organizer grappling with the mounting crisis. I'm calling it a crisis at Unity Healthcare. He's working with the workers there. He's going to tell us what some of the problems are. But I would just like to say, for those of you who do not know what Unity Healthcare is, some of you may have heard of DC General, which the powers that be worked for years to make sure that our only public hospital was closed. And my friend Lucy was right there out in the streets with us as we try to keep it open. In the process of closing DC General, they also shut down around 15 or 20 community health clinics that were under the umbrella of the public health system. And out of that, there was an organization called the DC Primary Care Association, and
this is a clear case of privatization.
Yes.
Because all of the clinics and the hospital were under DC government. And we know that all across the country, government services have been privatized. They get rid of the black employees, and they give contracts to nonprofit organizations, which tend to be headed by white individuals.
And they turn into capitalist organizations.
And they hire young white people who don't stay very long, and so there's a lot of staff turnover.
Yeah. And so, Lucy, check this out, what we're going to hear. It's quite upsetting, and we're going to need to support and stop what's happening. Carrie Lane, welcome. Welcome to WPFW.
Well, thank you so much, Joni. Thank you so much for having me and alerting your listeners to this very alarming situation.
Yes. Yeah, so first of all, tell us about the union that you represent.
Okay. We're the Union of American Physicians and Dentists, UAPD. We're the oldest union who have organized physicians and healthcare providers. We've been doing this for 52 years, mostly on the West Coast, but we're seeing a lot of demand and more demand for unionization of healthcare providers than we can handle. So we have moved steadily into the East Coast, and Unity Healthcare is one of our first units on the East Coast.
So tell us, because we unfortunately have not that much time, but tell us what's happening at Unity. I've been very familiar with Unity for decades, for 4 years. I used to be on the board of their Healthcare for the Homeless program, and it's quite tragic and alarming what is happening. So,
yeah. So, you know, after years and years of unsafe working conditions and a culture of bullying and intimidation and corporatization, as you mentioned, we had, you know, a revolving door, as you mentioned, of overpaid executives and lack of transparency and lack of giving these vital healthcare providers breaks or administrative time and retaliating and withholding their pay. The 150 Unity providers who consist of, you know, not just physicians, but nurse practitioners and dentists and midwives and mental health clinicians. They organized with us in the fall. They won their union election in December with a 90% vote. And I don't need to tell you how significant that number is, and
wow,
and sort of symbolic of the workplace issues we're seeing at Unity. But, you know, Unity providers see 80,000 patients across all wards of the city, you know, through 20 clinics, of course, through the DC jail and through homeless outreach. But, you know, this continued disrespect of these workers and the corporatization of this federally qualified health of the health clinics has created a very alarming situation. So
Carrie, let's just start out with how many clinics does Unity have at this point? Is it still about 20?
Yes, about 20, and plus the DC jail, and they also do homeless outreach. So they're working with the city's homeless population, the poor, the disadvantaged, really providing frontline care for those who cannot afford health care otherwise. It's such an essential service, and we're really flummoxed, and the public should be alarmed that these essential providers are in a workplace that is so unsupportive and in fact draconian. You know, the CEO has a consulting background. You know, I don't think a consulting background or a corporate background really sort of should be in leadership for a federally qualified health clinic that provides services like these. It's sort of antithetical to the mission of what
Absolutely.
Unity does.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because of the union victory, we get to collectively bargain our first contract. You know, thus far, Unity has, they first of all, they hired, of course, famous anti-union lawyers, Littler. They have responded basically with delayed negotiations and retaliation through withheld pay and refusal to improve safety measures and, you know, attempts to silence our voices through, you know, conflict of interest policies and, policies that are meant to gag our unit members. But, you know, we will not be silent. You know, this is a community issue. Unity's disrespect of Unity's providers is certainly bad for patients and it's bad for Washington. I should mention that we did file unfair labor practice charges against Unity Healthcare for bargaining in bad faith and retaliation and trying to illegally silence our workers through things like non-disparagement clauses, which are not
okay.
legal.
So Carrie, let me just say, folks, this is a very serious issue. We're going to have to come back to it. And Lucy, I'm going to have to ask you to help. We're going to have to organize the community to be aware of this, because as people may know, if you are on Medicaid, you now have to go through a very corporate Medicare managed care organization to get your care. Some of that is done through Unity. And I have friends who thanks to Unity are able to get some health care. It's very serious that with our healthcare issues in the district, they're getting worse, folks, and we know that they're not getting better. And so we're having an attack. A very important entity, Unity Healthcare, is getting worse and worse and worse. How many employees have left already, Carrie?
So in the last 3 months alone, we've lost 25. Healthcare providers at Unity, which is about 18% of the workforce in the last 3 months alone because of the workplace conditions, they've resigned. For the most part, they have not been replaced. So, you know, it's a very, very cynical situation where the executive team might be looking to pad their numbers by not replacing providers or sending a message that to thin out the herd, to demoralize workers. But we're not demoralized. In fact, we're taking our message to the community in a very big way. We've met with the DC
Okay, so... Metro DC Council, we're gonna have to help you meet with them a little bit more again, because this is a pretty tough crisis, folks. I must say, you are holding a demonstration. Tell us about what's happening on Saturday, and then unfortunately we're gonna be out of time. We have one minute.
Wonderful. And I want to just invite all of your listeners. We're having a solidarity rally at the Upper Cardozo Health Clinic this Saturday from 10 a.m. to 12 noon, this Saturday, May 11th. Upper Cardozo Health Clinic, as you know, Joni, symbolically...
It's the first health clinic in the United States, first federal clinic in the
United
States.
So we chose that as a symbolic site for our solidarity rally. It's 3020 14th Street Northwest, Upper Cardozo Health Clinic.
Yes, we know where it is.
Any and all of your listeners are welcome to join us in solidarity. We're going to get, you know, this begins our process of taking our message to the community. We're going to get loud. We are going to get a contract for these essential workers, and we can't thank you enough for helping us spread the message, Joni.
Well, we can't thank you enough for standing up for the workers and for the people. I don't know if this makes sense. If people want to get in touch with you to support you,
sure. I think maybe the easiest way is through our Instagram page, uapd.uhc. UAPD.UHC is searchable through Instagram, and where we have updated
information. Okay, and we're going to have you back again, and Lucy's going to help me. We're going to have to try to organize a group of people.
What time is it again on Saturday?
10 a.m. to noon at Upper Cardozo.
Which is 14th Street between Irving and Columbia Road. It's right next to the Columbia Heights Metro Station.
That's right. It's right there, folks. So if you can come out a Saturday morning, and we're going to, again, continue to work with Carrie and the union that is supporting the workers at Unity Healthcare. We cannot afford to lose Unity Healthcare, which has 20 clinics across the city, not to mention the jail and out in the streets with the homeless. Thank you, Carrie, very much for what you are doing. We need to move on right now for another urgent story, and I kind of apologize for packing the show like this, but we are pleased and happy to have on with us a wonderful representative, one of the co-conductors with Harriet's Wildest Dreams. And again, we wish we had some drums and some whistles and to honor Kiana joining us. She's been on with us before. She was also on, I think it was last week or recently, on Roach Brown's show. Kiana, welcome.
Hello, and thank you so much for having me. It's an honor to be here once again. It's starting to feel like a second home.
Well, it didn't. You can even make it your first home. So tell us, Kiana, for those real quick, for those of people who don't know about Harriet's Wildest Dreams, and I must say, Harriet's Wildest Dreams, I would call it my number one favorite wonderful organization. You guys are such great organizers and are out in the street on many, many issues. So tell our listeners who don't know what Harriet's Wildest Dreams is.
Yeah, so at Harriet's Wildest Dreams, we are a Black-led abolitionist hub that are protecting the lives of those Black folks in the community that are at risk for state-sanctioned violence. And so in that vein, we have a program or an awareness that we do every single year, which is the Black Mamas Bailout in conjunction with the Free Black Mamas DMV Coalition, where we participate in bailouts. Washington, D.C. does not have bail per se. So what we do is we actually find women who are D.C. residents who are incarcerated in other jurisdictions across the country, in Virginia and Maryland. And we bail them out and help them with wraparound support services to be able to navigate life after release, right after they're released from incarceration. And so we are having an event on this coming Saturday in conjunction with the Black Mamas March, who will be in town from Friday until Saturday, where they have a march on Saturday.
Wow.
But our particular collaboration is Freedom in the Park this year. We will be at the Anacostia Park from 2 to 6, having Freedom in the Park. All are welcome to come out and find out more about what we do here at Harriet's Wildest Dreams, as well as the Coalition for Free Black Mamas. DMV.
And Kiana, about roughly how many Black women from the DC or DC area are incarcerated now?
Roughly. That's rough. That's mm-hmm. rough to say, roughly. We don't really have a good count on that. And that's because the system doesn't want to, does not want us to know how many of our people are tucked away in cages. And so finding that information out is also is very, very difficult for us to keep tabs on that. We try to work with different public defender's offices and things to try to help us. But the truth of the matter is that our people are hidden from us on purpose. And so we don't have an accurate account. So if you have someone that you know, a lot of the times, a lot of our bailouts come from word of mouth. It's someone who knows someone who's incarcerated. I'll never forget, we were at Bus Bowls and Poets for an event in Anacostia. And the waiter said, I heard about y'all's work. And I have a loved one, my best friend, who is locked up. She's a DC resident. She's locked up in Anne Arundel County. And we went the next day to get her. So it is word of mouth at this point, unfortunately. Fortunately, we don't know how many of our people have been kidnapped from us.
Absolutely. And there was a magnificent national event a week ago, Wednesday, I'm forgetting the date, where there were thousands of people that came from all around the country, organizations working to get sisters, support sisters who were already released or still incarcerated. It was quite a magnificent event. I wish we could have broadcast it. But some of those people, I guess, are coming back in town for this. You say there's a march on Friday?
Yes. So there's a march on Friday. We are in collaboration with the Black Mothers March. The Black Mothers March is bringing awareness to the harms that the CPS systems across this country bring to Black women and families.
And CPS
and
means...
we thought it, CPS, the Child Protective Services,
yes.
And how they take Black women and Black families and they separate them. And the intersection here, Joni, is that we have women who are incarcerated. And when you're incarcerated, you have no one to get your children. CPS is the next system that comes to attack you. So we thought it would be so wonderful to collaborate with the Black Mothers March to be able to help them bring forth their message. So the Black Mothers March will be here and they will be marching on Washington on the 12th, on Mother's Day, to bring awareness to the fact that there are a lot of Black mothers who their children have been kidnapped and taken away from them, whether by incarceration or any other complaints or whatever happens at the CPS system. Yes. So that's what we're collaborating with them.
Wow. So again, repeat what Harriet's Wildest Dreams is doing Saturday. And also, what's the easiest way for listeners to find out and support Harriet's Wildest Dreams? Because I know you have a campaign going on for the Black Mama's Bailout. If you can tell our listeners how they might be able to support you by any means necessary, financial or otherwise, what's a way that, and also just being there for some of these great events you're doing, including on Saturday.
Yes. This Saturday, from 2 to 6 at Anacostia Park, Harriet's Wildest Dreams will be in coalition with DMV Bailout and Free Black, DMV Bailout and Black Mothers March to have freedom in the park. We will have moon bounces for kids, face painting. We will have programming. We will have food, free food, ice cream for the kids. So we will be having just freedom in the park, and all are welcome to come. And then we have the ways that you can support us, right? The ways that you can support us, please follow us on Harriet's Wildest Dreams on all social media platforms. That is the best way to get in contact with us. We're very active on our social media. The quickest way to find out what's going on with Harriet's Wildest Dreams is to follow us on social media.
Yes, and folks, if you do not know Harriet's Wildest Dreams, I'd say if we have some good news in the city, in the DMV, it is Harriet's Wildest Dreams, right, Lucy?
Yes, harrietsdreams.org.
Yes, absolutely. And also, they're very creative in how they share this information. They are our good news of standing up for all the people. They don't just work on one issue. They work on many, many issues, including stopping the genocide in Gaza. They are out there in the streets.
Yes.
Right, Lucy and I see them all the time. And this is another issue, very key issue. And Kian, I don't know if you're going to be on Roach's show again tomorrow. If he hasn't called you, I say give Roach a call because he has 2 hours tomorrow from 10 to noon. And Roach would want to to make sure that everybody knows about this as well. Kiana, we thank you very much, and I'm so happy you could be on with us. We have, I think, two more minutes. Anything else you'd like to say, Kiana? Otherwise, we thank you again.
Just say that it's an honor to be here, as always. I'm in Vegas, so my time is different right now. I do the work all over the country, and I am the work, right? And so, you know, being a part of the National Council, being a part of Harriet's Wildest Dreams and Life After Release, is because I am the work, and I believe in the work that we do. So, folks, I want to make mention that do not wait until this happens to you or someone in your family. Please, please do not be ashamed of incarceration. If this is something that your family is going through, and find a support system. And we at Harriet's Wildest Dreams, we are able to support you and your family if you have, you know, a situation around incarceration.
Yes. And thank you so much for all the work you do. And we know that there are people right here in Washington, D.C., who are responsible for killing thousands of people, if not more, and yet they're not incarcerated. So we have to question who should really be incarcerated, or actually we need to abolish prisons in general. And, of course, Angela Davis and others have been saying that for a long time. We're almost out of time. We want to remind you again about the Thursday night Mother's Day concert.
Yes, the Concert for Peace at Washington City Church of the Brethren, 337 North Carolina Avenue Southeast. That's Capitol Hill, Washington, D.C. It's a free concert, so finances should not be an obstacle. And you can get on the bus, and some of us know that you don't have to pay when you get on the bus.
Absolutely.
They force you to pay on the train, but, you know, the bus driver will let you ride.
Yes.
So 337 North Carolina Avenue Southeast,
on
Thursday May 9th at 7 p.m.
Yes, and we must remember Thursday is also John Brown's birthday, as our Dick Gregory would always be reminding us. Dick Gregory called him the greatest man, not only white man, but greatest man who has lived, I guess, in this country. John Brown's birthday this Thursday. And next Monday, we're starting the pledge drive. So keep in mind to support us. And remember that the true meaning of Mother's Day is to put an end to war. So we can honor our mothers. And I honor my mother for teaching me that. And Lucy, we're going to go out real quick with a song.
Mother's Day by Peter Jones, sung by Lucy Murphy and a band from Malta. We all attended a festival in Moscow in 1986.
Okay, and hopefully, thanks to Magic Mike, he's going to magically play
that.
Great. Thank you, Magic Mike, and everybody.
My children are hungry. They're sick from the heat. While I pick the crop for others to eat, and you take my money, you think I don't see. You use it to fire on women like me.
The DC Music Census is now live. Led by the DC Commission on the Arts and Humanities, the DC Music Census is an initiative that collects data from music industry professionals about the DMV's music economy, allowing the district to make informed decisions in supporting the music ecosystem. The census is anonymous and designed for anyone working within the music industry. Members of the music community may take the census by visiting dcmusiccensus.org. That's dcmusiccensus.org. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
WPFW is looking for a new place to hang our hats and microphones. And we're betting that members of WPFW's In the Know listening community, folks like you, may know of spaces where we might make our new home. Have you walked past or know of a cool space that appears to be for lease? Hit us to it. Know of something that's not yet on the market? We're all ears. Your station for jazz and justice requires 2,200 square feet of space in Washington, D.C. or immediate environs. Metro accessible with nearby parking. We value your suggestions and observations as we embark on this vital mission. Email your tips to wpfw.lsb.relocation@gmail.com. And thanks for all you do to nourish and sustain WPFW, building a better world one broadcast at a time.